First of all, I wanted to say that I've been giving you, there was material that I gave you from Dr. Tamar Ross, which I gave you to read and stuff. That's represented one side, there was other stuff. What I would like you to do, I will eventually discuss it.
Can you give us a week's notice?
Yes, I will give you a week's notice. No, I didn't want you to think that I'm done. Okay. I will eventually...
Or testing us.
I think there's one other article that before we discuss it, that I want you to read it out, which is Saul Berman's article, which is one of the first articles
in Tradition.
In Tradition. If you have read it, it's a wonderful article. Okay. And there's a lot, hopefully I'll give you enough material so you don't know where I stand. And but that's important. It's important to read this stuff and just to stimulate your thinking on the subject and get the different approaches to the problem. Any case, let's just sort of summarize what we've seen in the last year. Last year we actually saw a very dramatic change. That is, through the 16th, 17th, 18th centuries, we saw that the consensus of the post-Gilman was really against women saying Kaddish. There were, from time to time, permission to say Kaddish at the home, but even at the post-Gilman, as a general rule, were pretty much against it. Certainly for a case of a normal woman. I mean, a normal woman whose father passed away, the post-Gilman almost didn't even discuss it. It seemed obvious that they weren't going to say Kaddish. The only case that the post-Gilman had considered it was the only daughter. Right, and there was the only daughter, and that's the post we wanted to discuss. That situation, but the situation where a woman who was not a daughter wanted to say Kaddish didn't occur to anybody. I mean, that didn't seem to be a normative situation. There are times to time, as I told you, in the response from literature, and we haven't gone through it all, but the response from literature did in fact record, and we'll see some testimonies today, that the women, as usually it was an only daughter, went into the men's section, say Kaddish. Remember, this was, as I pointed out last week, this was a still under the one person, one Kaddish principle. That person, it was of course at the very end of the dialogue that she would go in. Now, I also mentioned to you that the Ashkenazim did have, the whole issue about women saying Kaddish came up in the Ashkenazi world. The Sephardi world, it was never even contemplated. As we moved into the modern period, we saw that there one of the major changes was that the Avelim started saying Kaddish together. And there, as a result of that as being one of the major considerations, also I think the fact that in the back of the mind of the post-Gilman is this rampant assimilation that's going on, where the question of the power of Kaddish bring people back to Shul is also becoming a public policy consideration. We see that the post can now begin to reconsider the public policy decision. And we saw that Rav Henkin came out in favor of a woman saying Kaddish in the Ezra Nashim, while the men were saying Kaddish. We also saw that he was that there were several attacks on him, but they were defended pretty well by his grandson. We saw that Rav Sholi Israeli, who was the Avved in the Beddin HaGadol Yerushalayim. We spoke, came out in favor. We saw a very strong statement of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik that public policy requires men, forbids rabbis from not allowing women to say Kaddish. So he said that considering that the power of Kaddish and the fact that women are, that if we don't allow women to say Kaddish, many of them will be thrown into the arms of the former conservative, there's good impetus of public policy consideration to in fact allow women to say Kaddish. Now, I just want to point out, before we go on, I'd just like to read one tshuva again from the Sephardi school, because we've been following the Ashkenazi school. I mean, you have to keep seeing what's going on in the Sephardi school. They really have a very different, they don't have a tradition of women saying Kaddish. And let me give you a response written, and I should point out to the Rav Chaim Uziel, who was the first Sephardic chief rabbi, was asked a Kaddish question about women saying Kaddish, and he simply says Kaddish wasn't, the custom was not for women. It was not given to Ruth. It was given to him. That was his fundamental argument. Chaim David Alevi, who was the Sephardi chief rabbi in Tel Aviv, a wonderful, caring human being in many ways. He really should, if it wasn't for politics, he should have been the Sephardi chief rabbi of Israel, or the previous commands, yeah. Chaim David Alevi Zal wrote a tshuva. Again, let's read, let's see what he said. Okay, well, this is a selection from this response. Number nine. Okay, source number nine. Okay, very modest. This tshuva was written, I would imagine, around 10 years ago. Nezaseh lechavad. In yechol abak lomar kaddish al horeh. Nishalti telefonit ha'idei echad lechashidei rabanei ireinu bedvar adam shneftar Okay. Ve'lefnei moto tziva lebitoch ha'yechida. Again, an only daughter. She'tomar alav kaddish b'shat stimat ha'golel ha'kibur. She's a kaddish by the graveside as he's being buried. Ve'she'lo nikedat ma lasod imutar ve'lo lo. Ba'otah sha'a. Ba'otah sha'a nizkapti b'dvar ber heitev she'ketav b'shem ha'tshuva ha'kneset yechezkel. She'in minia shabbat ha'malkad ha'shlaviyah b'vvaitah. Okay, this again is the Shlut Yaakov's position that we saw it. But other people said the same thing. There's no problem with her saying Kaddish in her home. But not sure that in her home you could have a special meaning for her to say Kaddish, but not in her home. V'chei kata b'shem Shari Tshuva b'shem Shlut Yaakov she'chol ha'bat lo ma'malkadish b'minyan she'b'vaitah b'vad aber lo b'vaitah k'nes. Doesn't ensure there's a public policy consideration that it might undermine the concept that a woman can't say, can't be a shliach tzibur because she's not obligated to be so. But he's a pastak in the rabbi shohel. Shehen the time mitzvah of the kayem dvar amin. Because of the obligation that we normally have, the chazal said it's an obligation to fulfill the wishes of the priest. She became me, bibito lomar alav kaddish echad bilvah. She only asked for one kaddish. If we elevation of the soul, which a woman can do, that is not on halachic grounds, that's not a problem. Toma kaddish achrei sheyashuvu habayta lasot sudat avraham. Notice he's not going to keep what the father asked. The father asked that she say kaddish by the graveside, so he's not going to allow her to do that. But he says she should say kaddish at home, at the sudat avraham, when the family all gather together for the condolence meal. B'minyan shel b'nei mishpacha, the minyan of the family members, ach lo kefi shebikesh b'shat tzivah ha'golel v'tikvah. In the public performance of mourning, where probably people around even Chaim David Alevi doesn't want it. But in the privacy of their home, he says she can say kaddish. V'nidon didan ha'davar mechuyav gam mislarach. It says, logic dictates this too. Shekein inyan, but this is cut and paste, so the transitions are. שכן עניין אמירת קדיש שמועיל לנשמת המת, באותה זכות שעומד בנו של אדם יוצא על הצו, שהוא הביאו לעולם, ומקדש שם שמו ברבים. What's the source of the credit that's done? It sees the fact that when gets up and says, Kaddish and sanctifies God's name, and causes other people to also sanctify. ודינו שאותו אב שבן זה יצא לך על הצו, שהוא חלק מגופו ומהותו הפיזית והנפשית. And this child, which is part of the father's physical and spiritual makeup, I mean, they're connected. Shekein manchilu lo gam tchonot ha'gufaniyot b'dimuto b'tzalmo. Because a parent passes over to the child both his physical qualities, genetically, v'chgam et tchonotot v'nashir, and also his spiritual qualities. Yizkeh v'otot schar shal kidusha shaben mekadesh b'rabim. The son's actions should in fact bring reward to the father. Because sanctification, the soul be elevated. So as far as the credit is concerned, it works for the door as well. Ella. Shekein hu chayav b'mitzvot. Ella sheben hu chayav b'mitzvot. Vuhu ha-mishtatei b'tvila b'tzibur. Shalena ma'am nekdashti b'tov b'nei Yisrael. לכן פשוט שהוא המקנה שם שמיים ברבים במילת הקדיש ולא רבה. He says, now he's saying that since the son is the one who's obligated in the mitzvah of Tfilah B'tzibur, which is, and then the Kaddish is part of this obligation. So he doesn't see that as a separate obligation. He does, it's the same way. The Chen Pashru, right? Okay, Aval Kasher lo zacha adam lashir harav ben v'yesh lo bat, lam nimna mimeno oto nachat ruach bilu mishma shechol amirat Kaddish al yada lo il lo. ובייחוד כאשר הוא עצמו ציווה וביקש לפני מותו, ויש בזה גם משום מצווה לקיים דברי המת. So he says, look, it's the only daughter, there's no son there, even though the son is the one who's obligated to say Kaddish, it's part of the prayer form. Right? And, but there is no son, so what can a daughter do? Ach! However, כאמור ודא שלא בבית הכנסת, כפי שכתבנו לאל גם בשם הפוסקים המתירים, והטעם פשוט ביותר שלא ייתכן לעסוק בדברי קדושה במקום קדוש בצורה ובדרך עלולים לגרום ערעור עבירה אפילו קל שבקרן. He says, and the תשובה, he goes on the point that, and what he's hinting to, of course, is that she shouldn't be the center of attention. ובבית הכנסת מוצאים כל מיני בני אדם, כמובן מעלם לאוד, and it's a, the shul is open to public. It says, her being the center of attention will attract attention, may cause improper distraction. ומטעם זה לא ניתנתי בן אדון דינן לבת או מרקדיש בבית הכפרות, כי גם שם מצויים אנשים רבים, ואין זה מדרך הצניות. וגם בבית לא ניתנתי על במניין של חוג פרי המשפחה במער, אני ממש של הפמלי. ולא בשעה שבאים רבים להתפלל בציבור כנהוג בבית הבינים, שאז חזר החשש כמו בבית הכנסת, ואין מצווה לבית. Okay, so you see that he's only willing to consider it because the father specifically demanded and asked for it, and she's the only daughter and only has the family framework. And even though you see he builds up to saying that it works, it should work the same, but he doesn't feel any strong impetus to allow her to do it. And I want to point out that this is just he's gone very far. He's gone further than most Sephardi Poskim will allow. Right? But
he's talking about
one shot. And he's talking about a very given case, and he's talking about, it's, right. It's,
and he's talking specifically about the
Siddhartha Ba'ala. Right. I'm saying he's right in line with all Sephardi Poskim.
But this was probably keep it up in
him
if his father asks for it.
And that's exactly. Well, it makes me think it. Keep it up the aim. What? This question is valid all along. The father, when the Chabad Yair's questioning, the father asked it, and Kibbutz of the Ein has its limits. Okay, let me just fix it. It's very clear in Halakha. Your parents can't ask you to violate a rabbinic injunction, even a rabbinic injunction. And, because you know, you'd say that's not trivial, because the Halakha is esse dochalotas. A thou child can violate, can set aside a thou child not. So, if your parents say, I want you to do it, and if there's a thou shalt not, you might think, I can violate even some biblical commandments. Right? But the rule doesn't, so you think that there might be rules, situations. I have to listen to my father or mother, and even violate, you know, if esse docha lota says, if my father tells me to eat something that's not kosher, maybe I do have to listen to my father. Because the thou shalt can violate, can knock over a thou shalt not. But the Torah does not tell us. The Torah says, he should have, The Gemara learned from several sources that in fact your father parents cannot ask you to violate any biblical commandment, and even a rabbinic commandment, you don't have to listen to them. They cannot ask you to not to listen to halacha. Now, in the situation where the halachicists claim that this will cause danger to the community, they feel that they have the power to advocate the desire. Now, what's motivating here, a kind of a lady, is there's a mitzvah kind of Divrei HaMet, which is not, it's not only a Kibbutz of Ein that's associated with the community as well. And there's somebody that's on the community around to try to fulfill the last wishes of the deceased. That's not Kibbutz of Ein. So he's trying to find a way, he's pulling out all the stops. He's setting up the case in a very extreme case. Only daughter, one shot deal, buy the kid, and sending it up in a way that he can, that will not. Yes.
I'm troubled by the way that
the women's being, calling attention to herself is defined as an avira, whereas, I mean, we're not talking about Kol Isha here, it's just talking about the fact that she's calling attention to herself. And that's more a question of feeling. Why does he put it in the category of a prohibition, a transgression? And
what strikes me,
there's no limit to what the rabbinim can do. They can always say, she can't go out to this. I mean, you can take the Rambam maybe as the source that she shouldn't be in the street,
but the only reason she's calling attention to herself is because it's not normally done. Well, if it was normally done, then it wouldn't seem like calling attention to yourself anyway.
The arguments are valid. I don't deny them. The arguments are clearly valid. And not in that, there's a lavush, which we talk about Sheva Brachot and a variety of other topics. But there's a very famous lavush. That's probably before that. Many of the poskim say that when men and women are sitting together at a chasana, you should not say, you would say, Baruch Hashem, Hashem, Simcha, B'mono, Shachamim, Shalom, D'vopi. In the introduction to the Shema Brachot, you say that there is happiness in God's dwelling place, Shachamim, B'mono, B'shacham, we ate from God's meal, so to speak, because it's a Zubat Mitzvah. The poskim say that when men and women are sitting together, God's not happy. And that you should not say Shasimcha b'mono. I don't want to go with this is a clear statement brought in the poskim. And the Lavush, okay, states, and the Lavush is quite early. He says, he's already in the Lavush is in the 1600s. The Lavush says, nowadays where we are used to having women amongst men, they are kikvaki chiyuma. They're like beautiful white kistas. What does that mean? That's the Gemara. Beautiful white
geese.
No,
it's the Gemara about the
mikvah. What? Give me the little translation. What is the idea? The idea is that there are beautiful beings that don't cause sexual distraction. That's the idea. It's complimentary. It's not meant to be derogatory in any fashion whatsoever. On the contrary, which means that we're used to having women around. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're sexually distracting and therefore going to the bush. Even though there is an exception, you can still say Now, you can say this is part of a whole debate of mixing and superseding and winning. So when we get into mechitza, okay, which will some topic we will get into pretty semester. We'll discuss this at length. There's an article that just came out by Rabbi Eli Clark on the whole question of seating at weddings and periodical. Fascinating, right?
Very
fascinating.
Right.
You like
that? You see that in the plural.
I'm really putting the word. Anyway, I'm putting the bush action. Now, the point is that you see, and the Levush, now there are these major debates in modern orthodoxy about co-education versus separate education, about questions of women mixing society. This Levush, you can see, is a pivotal, most of the discussion will turn because we went at Amis from Levush, because what the Levush is essentially saying is that elements like what bother you, like sexual distraction and the like, are really, in some ways, socially determined, right? We're not talking about a woman doing anything that's seductive. She's not doing anything that's improper. Do we worry about the very fact that the woman is there? Is that calling attention to herself? Is that like it's needed? Now you see that the undertone of High Level Lady is that maybe not, but you never know who's gonna be there, right? Okay, that's right. You're 100%. The question is, do we have to, if I were to use feminist terms, but don't hold me to it, okay? If I were to use feminist terms, do we oppress women because there's some fringe element, male, who's going to have sexual distracting thoughts, and therefore they might allow women to do it, okay? Now, as a halakhist, I wouldn't have said it that way. Do we said that it's a question of lifnei iver, lo titein nichshol. If you're causing somebody who's off, you know, do I have to worry about the extreme element? Who anytime he sees a woman, he goes bananas? Does a woman have such a responsibility? Or do we say no? She's doing what's right. She's dressed in modesty. She's not doing anything that's okay now. So, but the problem that's okay. So I think we see both sides. And I think that what the Rechaim of the Levi is doing to some extent is trying to walk a very fine line. Because he's trying to say, look, she's not doing what's normal. Don't look for herself. She's not, what?
Normative, not normal.
Right. Well, I don't she's not doing what's normative either. I mean, you don't normally have a woman in a prayer situation getting up and leading the prayer service. Now, everybody understands that that's not normative, right? And that may in itself say, oh, she's doing something. Right? It's not. The question is, you know, there's this interplay of, we're used to women getting up and giving lectures, we're used to women getting up and do this. Why all of a sudden when she gets up and says Birkat HaGomel, or she gets up and says Kaddish, do you make such a big deal about it? Now that's why Rav Henkin felt that his solution was the best. Because if you have a woman getting up when the men are getting up, right? Then there's no problem because she's not calling her attention. So you can't criticize. So Rav Henkin says, there's no room for criticism. If Rav Henkin were to answer this shayla, Rav Henkin would have said, make sure there's some other man saying Kaddish while she's saying Kaddish. Don't make her the center of attention. Don't create, avoid the problem completely. Right?
Let's face it, when a woman is the only mourner at a funeral, she's the center. I mean, she's
that's
somewhat
correct.
The center of attention.
That's correct.
The fact that she's vocalizing something doesn't make it more so.
That's correct. But if there were several other people saying Kaddish with her, if she wasn't the only mourner, but suppose there were not, she's the only daughter, but suppose, I mean, if you ask me, if I were to have a past in this shayla, okay, and I were to have Reb Chaim Dover Levi sensitivities, I would say, Reb Chaim, there's an alternative. We have a way out. We use Reb Hankin's way out. Let her say Kaddish, but to get, well, you have other people say Kaddish too. Look, there's a halacha, you can say Kaddish in Adam Kashin. You can, any, if the person is a good individual, anybody can say Kaddish. So we'll arrange for somebody to say Kaddish for him. Other people, you want the daughter of Moses to say Kaddish, yes, she say Kaddish. This is Rav Henkin's idea. Okay? I'm trying to say that it's more of a question of sensitivity than halacha here on this particular issue.
Maybe the daughter would say Kaddish. There's a different feeling from his father for her mother.
Then stop somebody, a bucha, you pay him. That's right.
Even if it's a very nice, noble young man.
Right. I think let's finish up the presentation, and then we'll talk. You're 100% right. And it means something to the daughter. That's a valid point. Okay, now let's look at source Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein, the last volume that came out about a year ago, which came out after he passed away, the grandchildren, nephews, grandnephews collected a variety of tshuvot of Rav Moshe. This is source number 12. And Rav Moshe is dealing here with the question of, do you need a mechitza for one or two women? This is a separate issue which will come back to tshuva and other tshuva like it when we deal with mechitza. Does one person require one or two women require mechitza? So let's read his tshuva. She'en and sofim mechitza lachsot zavak b'fnei isha achat u'shtayim. She'ne begon Moshe chilek alef, orach hayim simul ha'mtet b'sofo. Heveti raya mekidushun nimbet amedbet, betosot v'amadon ha'mkidim chi'e isha v'azor ha'minayim. She'en chiyu b'mechitza lachsik l'fnei kama nashim ha'mad. I brought to that response that you don't need a mechitza to divide amongst a few women. The circle of her, I'd come and I should answer to her. How many is a few women?
For what ends?
For sure.
Just in
general. Sure, and these women, for the classic example, there's several old women who could go up to the balcony, and they want to sit in the back of the shul. I mean, this was the classic example we've all done.
When I was
networking
years ago,
no.
The women, they had a separate set up and downstairs by the men who lived in the back. The women could not walk up the stairs.
Correct. Okay, so we have to see, but you'll see that Rav Moshe's not too happy with it. I wasn't able to do it. You'll see that it's not, Rav Moshe's not going to be happy with that solution as a permanent solution. To give several examples. In the fifth line. Kagon, the Beit Avel, in the house of a mourner, which, you know, it becomes like a shul for those 7 days. Or Beit Midrash, Shemitpalim Sham Bimechol, Bimincha B'Shabbat, Shein Sham Mechitza. And normally women don't come, but this woman now decides she wants to come to shul. Okay? האם מותר להניח שכמה אנשים ייכנסו וישבו בסוף אחרת, שזה יסיד בבקדו? והנה, בכל הדורות נהגו שלפעמים, זה was a custom throughout the generations, שנהגו שלפעמים הייתה נכנסת אישה ענייה לבית המדרש. A woman, a poor woman, would come into shul, לקבל צדקה, to collect money, או אבילה, לא אומר קדיש, or an אבילה, would come into zakah. וההלכה למעשה בעניין זה צריך עיון ותלויה בהרבה עניינים. The הלכה למעשה, whether it's proper or not, he's not, he doesn't want you to think that he's passing on this issue. He just testifies that it happened. Depends on the situation, etc. מכל מקום נראה שבבית המדרש, שבכל שבת תרצה אפילו אישה אחת לבוא למנחה בכפיות, שאין להקל להתפלל ולא מחיצה. ורק בהקראה אי אפשר להתפלל. On a regular situation, he says, I'm not happy. It says it happens one at a time, it says it's all right. There are two women, he says it's all right. והנה יש ראיה כאין שהזכרת, שלדינה אפשר להניח לאישה אחת להיכנס בן מדרש. I proved to you that you can have one woman come to the מדרש. מן הדין בשולחן אורך חיים סימרש פלבט זה גימו, דאישה עולה למניין שיבת כהן. We'll talk about this. The Gemara states that in theory at least, a woman can get an aliyah, okay? There's an issue called Kavarat Tzibur. Kavarat Tzibur, we'll talk about what it means, what its rules are, what the criteria, but there are situations, for instance, I'll give you a classic example of the poskim, where there's no, all the men are amoratzim. Nobody knows how to read from the Torah, and the woman, this woman knows how to read. So she can go up, the poskim say, she can go up and read to get an aliyah. She'll read from the Torah, because she's the only one who knows how to read. The question is how many men you get, more than women can go, or the Shabbos, the weekday, we'll talk about the whole parameters. But the post can say, halacha l'maisa, that it's not just something we'll discuss. So all the post can ask, okay, how does she get an aliyah? She become in the men's section. But what happened to the chitza? Says Rav Moshe, since a woman can come up and get an aliyah, you see that there's no need for the chitza for one woman. And even two, because when you get back to back, so you can get back to two women. So two women, you don't need mechitza. All right. And this is the source number 13 is a source from Yom HaShishi. Yom HaShishi is one of the Haredi newspapers. And let's see what it says here. Mechtav l'marechet iton mesuyam, katav shalom zvuloni, mekibutz usha, bo hu kotev benoseh shalivat kadish ha'yevat. This Shalom Zvuluni wrote an article, a letter to the editor about daughter saying Kaddish. Okay, Bat Yechida. She tir ha Rav HaSvaradi HaRashi beBe'er Sheva, Rav HaRonji, who was the Svaradi chief rabbi. He came to the headlines this past Friday. I don't know if everybody saw it. You remember what it was? He said that Dan International accounts for me.
Right.
Why? Because she's a yid. I get a share, and that's the most positive. Valdenberg disagrees. Valdenberg says everything goes by externals, but most people depends what you were born, and there's no such thing, you can't really change your sex. There's a post who do talk about the possibility of if you could implant the whole biological system. So it seems that Rav Gershuni suggests that you could change. But simply by doing surgery, right, even though as radical as it is, surgery that does not change you biologically.
All those hormones that he takes must change in biologically. All those hormones he takes must change in biologically.
Well, it changes secondary characteristics. It doesn't change. It doesn't make you allow. It doesn't allow you to birth. Besides, the latest gossip is that Don International did not undergo the operation. So. Now you know everything I know about it. But anyway, she created, or he created, whatever it is, a lot of interesting halakhic discussion. Okay, the Mechtavo, so anyway, Rabbi Abergil, Paskin, what happened to about that he said that Shehitir Rabbi Sfaradir Rashi Beber Sheva Lefnei Kama Shanim, the Mechtavo Kotev. So he said that only daughter could say Kaddish, but I don't have the original statement of what exactly was the conditions were at home and shul. I don't have that letter, but what's important is the Mechtavo Kotev, Ki Hu Zocher Bialdoto Bialystok, Vishnot Hashloshim, in the 1930s, Halach Lo Lomo Rosh Mishpacha Shishir Rak Bat Yechida, Vihi Amra Kaddish Kol Hashana Betfilot Mincha Va'arvit Bevet HaKnesset. Result the fiyeter rabbanim amakoyikomim, based on the psak of the local rabbis, the fizachar harad David Fialis, vezal v'chotno rav Shmuel Molander. Okay. Now they allowed her to say kaddish and shul again. I don't know what the details. I don't know if it was an adult daughter or it was a minor daughter. These are some of the details that folks can sometimes discuss in some of these distinctions. All right. Now let's turn over the page. Yes, and he goes on and he's
used.
Right. Right. No, he's okay. Ki huzocher b'yaldutto, that means Zulon is right. Okay. Again, this is one of the testimonies. We'll see some more as we now. The next selection comes from a very interesting book by Dr. Joel Olowelski, from lives in Flatbush. He's the he was one of the editors of Tradition over many, many years. And he's written several articles about women in halacha. And he just recently published a volume called Women, Jewish Law, and Modernity. And he has a very, very interesting section about Kaddish. And in this, the section that I brought here primarily focuses on the position of Rav Soloveitchik. Forgive me for reading, just we'll read it together and then make comment as we go along. If the reason for requiring a special minyan for the daughter is that she has no right to displace a man who has a right to say Kaddish at the synagogue, it would follow that in our synagogues, where the mourners say Kaddish displace no one else, that is, since the system has changed, a woman could say Kaddish. In fact, this seems to have been the position held by the Lithuanian poskim of the past generation, because remember, it was in the 1700s or early 1800s that the system changed. In the early 1970s, when the issue came up in a chapter of Yavne, the National Association of Religious College Students, I asked one of the organization's leaders, who was then learning with the Rav, Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, to put the question to him. Rabbi Ezra Bitt, now in Yeshiva Haaretz Yom, wrote back, "I spoke to the Rav about the question you asked concerning a girl saying Kaddish. He told me that he remembered being in Vilna at the Gaon's Klois, the Gaon's shul, which wasn't one of your modern Orthodox shuls. And a woman came into the back, there was no Ezrat Nashim women's section, and said Kaddish after Marit." No, after Marit, this is the Kaddish after Aleinu, the last Kaddish. "I asked him whether it would make a difference if someone was saying Kaddish along with her or not, and he replied that he could see no objection in either case." It's perfectly all right. That was the Rav's language. He could see no objection. Doesn't even have the sensitivity that kind of the lady has. He couldn't even see grounds for rejection. Then I could see grounds, but I don't accept them. But the Rock, in his honesty, says, "I can't even see grounds." I mean, I guess he has the sensitivity that nowadays, in the modern period, it should not cause a problem. It should not be a problem. What? Oh, clearly wasn't. Coincident, and although the Rav was sensitive to what the minute was, he didn't want it to cause a ruckus, but then Yavne, which is a modern Orthodox open organization, he didn't think there was a problem. Coincidentally, checking around, I came across a number of people who remember such incidents from Europe, including my father, in my grandfather's minyan, he was the Rav of the town, Rav Chaim Yechiel Bick, was the Rav of Mezhebuch Bush in Ukraine. Now again, he's going to give me several testimonies that women of women saying Kaddish. Rav Pinchas Zelig Prague, Gabi the Mir Minyan in Brooklyn, New York, told me that one of the congregants, Rav Moshe Maruch, who was born and raised in Vilna and who studied in the Mir at the Mir Yeshiva, recalled that when his cousin died, leaving an adult daughter, now that's important, an adult daughter and no sons, Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzinski. Now Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzinski, whenever mentioned, brings awe. Rav Chaim Ozer Grodzinski, just before World War II, was brought thousands of the yeshiva buffering from all over Europe and saved their lives, bringing them to Vilna. And then when the Russians, when the Nazis started moving towards Vilna, they had to move out, so some of them went to Shanghai, some of them, there was money coming in, there was papers coming in. Chaim Ozer Grodzinski. I mean, we heard last night, there was an excellent lecture given by Professor Menachem Friedman. And he points out that you know, the whole story about the yeshiva bachur who fled from Vilna to Shanghai, the one who arranged it, there are all sorts of myths about this Japanese guy who was happy only on enough, he had Japanese, and stuff like that. The one who actually arranged the whole thing was Zarathustra. And if you go through Jewish history, I will bring to your attention that this gentleman has done more for Klal Yisrael. And so many, he was a very special Jew at very special times throughout Jewish history. I just want to mention one other thing. I just remember
Zarathustra. Japanese guys did it also.
No, I'm not saying that. But the one who he went from yeshiva to yeshiva, I'm not Chas v'Shalom. I don't mean to say that the Japanese, there wasn't a Japanese contact, but the one who literally went from yeshiva to yeshiva to try to convince the yeshivas to go that route, and many of them simply rejected it, was Rav Zarathustra. He was the catalyst on the Jewish side. The flag of the State of Israel is blue and white because of Zarathustra. And I'll explain to you, he was from Poland, he was the representative of the Mafdal to the World Zionist Organization, Congresses. And there was the communists, for many, many years, almost since the first Congress, the flag was blue and white, with a Magen Dov in the middle, but it was blue and white. The Russian, the communist element, started with a red flag. And he came to the fore in the 30s, I think it was 1933, and said, enough. And because it was never an official vote. So I wanted an official vote, the flag was blue and white. And there was a very, very bitter floor fight, which he led, and he won. And that's why the flag was saved Israel.
Those communists, I would like you to know, they're old
matters. Oh, sure. Oh, of course they were drunk. The world's eyes are
kind. It was called, Jew is called Yed Sexia. That was called the Jewish section. Mm-hmm. Okay, and they.
He's very not opposite the Roman town. We saw his birth in the
Chaim Ozer, sure. Chaim Ozer was he was the great scholar. His another famous thing that he's involved in. I mean, if you talk about the gelatin issue, he was the one who came out in favor of kosher gelatin. That even though the source of gelatin is from non-kosher bones, the heter that they have eat gelatin in Israel, that's made especially in Holland, is based on his psak. When you have dry bones, irrelevant of their source, you can be kosher. And there are other posts who came out against it, but I mean. He was also one of the great Machabah Guno after World War I. He was one of the major leaders. Anyway, so when you talk in the Yeshiva world, you mentioned Chaim Ozer Grodzinski, and it brings awe and inspiration to one's heart. Anyway, so Chaim Ozer Grodzinski allowed her to say Kaddish daily in the synagogue. This was an adult daughter. Another recalled that the Chafetz Chaim had made a similar move. So there you see there are traditions, but again, remember, this is isolated cases of a only daughter. They never contemplated the thought of the girl saying Kaddish regularly. Professor Yaffa Eliach predicts a similar occurrence in her city of Zipporah Whitmer Kravitz, wife of Rabbi Yosef Kravitz, recalled to Dr. Eliach in 1935 when she was 14 years old. Okay, so again, she's over by mitzvah. Her brothers were out of town, her father, Nafni Menachem Whitmer, the dying of the town, died. She said Kaddish at the graveside and continued to say Kaddish at both the new Beit Medrash and the Shtibel until her brother returned. She recalled at the same time Gittel Gordon, then 18 years old, said Kaddish in the Shtibo. Another foreman happened to the town, recalled that when the girls said Kaddish, they wore berets and stood in the men's section in the first row to the right of the oven. I don't know exactly what's important to them. They sat in a separate section, but they sat, they were in shul. Okay, they came into shul. And again, the problem was because the other side of the mechitza, like we saw last week, but he says that the mechitzas that we have, which are don't go to the ceiling, our lower mechitzas wouldn't be a problem. The shuls, they're talking about shtibl of day, they're sitting before a ceiling with maybe a window so the women could hear. So that's why the women really to Rishuyot, and therefore the woman had to come in. Reb Moshe Feinstein, and then we've just read that Shiva, knows that throughout the generations it was customary that at times a poor woman would enter the Beit Midrash, that's for charity, or one mourner would enter to say Kaddish. Rabbi Elio, yes, we read Rabbi Ben's Tshuva. Rabbi Yosef Elio Henkin allowed women to say Kaddish and Shul, provided they remained in the women's section. You know that in past times, when only one person said Kaddish, the person would stand in front of the Shul, something inappropriate for a woman. However, now he continues, when all the mourners say Kaddish together, from their respective places, a woman may say Kaddish. Okay, now come from Soloveitchik again. Rabbi Soloveitchik also insisted that a woman saying Kaddish had to remain in the women's section. In the early 1970s, I asked Rabbi Gerald Blitzstein, then faculty advisor at Yale, now at Ben-Gurion University, about the issue. He wrote me, the Kaddish matter is as follows. I was asked about the question last year, and looking into it, I could find no reason beyond general public policy for forbidding it. I spoke to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, then Rosh Kollel at Yeshiva University, and now Rosh Yeshiva at Har Etzion, who had the same reaction and said he would ask the Rav, Soloveitchik's father-in-law, which he did when I was on the other end of the phone. Lichtenstein put the question to him, and then he was directed to ask him whether the girl was stationed in Yisrael Nashim. I, of course, answered in the affirmative. The Rav then said that, of course, she could say Kaddish. While European rabbis apparently did not always demand this, I suspect that the American poskim insisted on women saying Kaddish staying in the Ezra Nashim because they were concerned about the mixed seating that was gaining hold in many American synagogues. Rav Henkin's opinion allowing a woman to say Kaddish in the shul seems to be a lenient one, boldly breaking new grounds. Actually, it is a conservative opinion. For it is in opposition to existing customs, it requires that a woman not enter the men's section to say Kaddish. But on the other hand, if you appreciate that his heter would allow any woman to say Kaddish. That again, the Rav Henkin, in one hand, may have been machmer and saying the woman can't come in, but on the other hand, he's now opened the door for any woman to say Kaddish. Okay? There is, to be sure, little reason to think that a woman who wants to say Kaddish is engaging in some sort of protest, rather than simply attempting to use an acceptable halachic form to deal with a real personal crisis. When a woman says Kaddish in shul, whether or not accompanied by others, it is analogous to reciting Birkat HaGomel aloud from the woman's section. She offers her public praise of God and elicits a response from the congregation. Now, I must tell you that we read Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik came up very strongly that a woman should say Kaddish on public policy grounds. He says, if you don't allow the woman to say Kaddish, many of the cases will be forced into the conservative and reform camp. He, Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, was also adamantly against women's prayers. My brother Dov then asked him, how do you reconcile your two pesukim? Why over here you have no objection to women saying Kaddish, and yet in women's prayer groups you're adamantly against it? He says, the case of women's prayer groups, I'm adamantly against it because there's an issue here. There's an agenda. And I'm worried at the public policy grounds about where this agenda will lead. In the case of Kaddish, she says, these women are l'shem shemayim. It's not a question of having an agenda. This is a woman who's in terrible pain. She wants to express, give credit to her parents. This is a personal obligation, not a natural. He felt that in the considerations that there was no issue. Many of the rabbis who fight the women saying Kaddish believe women are trying to make a statement. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik has adamantly opposed that position. He says, no, this is something that a woman should be allowed to do. Now, the last section of the year is in section 15. Yeah.
has taken this upon herself? Is it the thing like if she would do it consistently and then all of a sudden one time she could do it? What happens in a case like that for a woman? So they didn't go, they don't go into that.
No, they don't. I don't, that, there's no one states here clearly. I mean, we did see in the passing that they, the lawyer said it, only in Hamar, they didn't say chapters. I want to mention that. No, I don't. I don't think there's any obligation. I don't think there's any obligation for her to say it. To say it three times a day. But
it's like a nether because it's a good thing to do. She's being mekayem shem shamayim. She's done it consistently up to a certain point.
And she should say to herself, "I'm not mekayem a nether. I'll do my best. I'm not mekayem a nether." And that's it.
Same thing with the man.
Whatever the consideration is, they're anus. But a woman too is anusa. I mean, when we check the neder, we understand. And when we went through the discussion that one day that we discussed, I mean, being under onus is understood. You know, you're no good if you do it on purpose. But if you're sick, you know, or you have to be abroad and it's for financial, whatever the reason is.
My mother-in-law said Kaddish in Glasgow, I think in the 1930s. She's one of the three daughters.
One of three daughters.
Yeah, and I'm not sure whether, I don't really don't know the story, but I know she was.
Yeah, let me just mention, I have a couple of testimonies here of cases that happened in the recent. With the emphatic, a main pronouncement, say the rabbi is equivalent with the full recitation of the Kaddish. And some communities allow the lawyer to say Kaddish. But I know of several cases, Rabbi Rebbetzin Oskolsky passed away in the summer of 1972. And they went to Rav Moshe Feinstein. They had three daughters. They went to Rav Moshe Feinstein. And he said they could say Kaddish by themselves, but they had a minyan at home. They had them in their home during Shiva, the daughters of Kaddish, and they stayed in an adjoining room near the doorway, and each daughter of Kaddish, they alternated the mornings. Rabbi Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, we saw, my brother Dov heard this business about the Vilna Gaon Shul. Now, my brother Dov says, Brother Dov, when he quotes the Vilna Gaon, he says, that the Vilna Gaon Shul got behind the machitza and said Kaddish. And that's the way he always. It's not exactly what we saw here. The last piece has to do with the question of whether it's public policy and it's a public policy. Essentially, Rav Yudank, there was an article written very recently. And again, there are two journals, by the way. You should be aware. One is called Tradition. Two Torah journals in English. They're both excellent. One is called, actually there are three. Now there are three. One is called Tradition, which is one of the oldest. They include Jewish philosophy, Jewish history, Halacha. The other one is the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society, which essentially has review articles on Halacha and different topics. And the third is Torah Mada, which includes mostly non-Halacha issues, although from time to time does have Halacha issues, put up by Yeshiva University. Anyway, though the Journal of Halacha and Contemporary Society in 1996, an article by Rabbi Reuven Fink about recital of women in Kaddish, and he comes out all one side, all against. And then he attacks anybody who tends to be there. Thank you. So, Yehuda Herzl, like in the grandson, lashes into Rabbi Fink about it. He tries to put him, who are you, Rabbi Fink, to put yourself up against from my grandfather? That's one point. But at the very end, he says as follows. And this is sort of the end of the tshuva. Piskei Zeal, on the other hand, because it's a Sephardi tradition, Rabbi Zeal I mentioned, prohibits women for saying Kaddish on intrinsic grounds, explaining that Kaddish is for men only. This is not the Ashkenazi view. Even the Chabad Yair accepted a daughter saying Kaddish at a minyan in her home, in theory, and prohibited only for secondary reasons, while Shmuel Yaakov permitted it in such cases altogether. we're left where we start. An issue is essentially a question of public policy, not of Easter egg. And that's, I think, is the feeling that you get along. In this context, my grandfather's words bear repeat. It is known that if it were not for Kaddish, many would refrain from teaching prayer to their sons and would not come to the synagogue. When they come because of Kaddish, they also come a bit closer to Judaism the rest of the year. And for this reason itself, one should not rebuff the na'alot, the daughters, that is, young maidens, either, since it fosters closeness to Judaism. Concludes Rav Henkin. On questions of policy, others may legitimately disagree. We should support any rabbi who declares, while such a practice may be technically, according to halacha, in my opinion, it would have dangerous consequences in my community, and so I will not permit it. And rabbis do have that power for their balabatim. Although I would urge careful consideration of my father's approach, even in the white heat of current controversy, what must be avoided is the confusion of halacha with politics. Now, let me just talk a little bit halacha about something.
No. Go ahead. No, I'm going to follow up and ask, but you're going to answer it. So.
Look, it's very clear that women saying Kaddish is becoming more and more acceptable, certainly in the modern Orthodox canon. And it's also very clear that it's based on very good poskim, that the problem is mainly public policy. And the rabbi in each community has the right to control them. That's when you pick a rabbi, that's part of his job. You decide what's good on public policy grounds versus community and not for the community. Initial, for instance, anyone who wants to say Kaddish, the other say Kaddish. In fact, I forgot to find out details, but I remember there for a while, Shane Shane was saying Kaddish, and they moved because they moved the shul from, instead of diving here every morning, they dive up there. So when she came to shul, she could say Kaddish, and there was no problem. I think after a while she preferred not, and she dived over here right behind the glass, and she said Kaddish over. She opened, they moved the glass so she could say Kaddish over. It can't be done. Many women find it very difficult to say Kaddish on a regular basis, and getting up quite early, and finding a minion that's amenable and getting up that minion dafkin and mitcha, it's more problematic. I think it's also clear that parents are aware of some of the sensitivities. And as a parent, doesn't usually insist that his daughters, I mean, I'm trying to take up, I mentioned several times, as Charlie Brown would say, there's no situation so bad that you can't make it worse than guilt. So I'm trying to take away the guilt element. Right? The guilt element has to do with the keeping of name. My parents, my father wanted them. Yes, I would have no objection if my daughters said Kaddish. But to say there and insist that my daughters say Kaddish when I know there are a lot of communities that are a lot less tolerant than ours, a lot less tolerant than many of the American communities, it's not always trivial. I wouldn't insist that my daughter, I'd say I want you to learn Torah from me. I want you to get stuck, because remember, the highest thing on the totem pole is learning Torah. Then comes Stucker. And then the low man on the totem pole, low man on the phone, as you want to say, whatever it is saying Kaddish. Kaddish is for those who don't know any better. I'm not saying, and from a halakhic perspective, a lot of other things you can do. I mean, many people have the custom of accepting for that year a new mitzvah to do. Do something special, do minhag chassadim. And all the posts can talk about it. All the posts can talk about that there's Kaddish has become much more than it need be. There are other things you can do. Kaddish is not the only thing. But the fact of the matter is that Kaddish is considered nowadays pretty important. And you have to, as when it comes to Rechav al Tzadok, a woman wants to say Kaddish, she has to find the right children. And it's not going to be, I think that the fact that there are a lot of tshuvas that are written. Okay, I know that in the Young Israel of Cleveland is not the most, Cleveland is not always the most liberal community. Okay, and there's a strong tone. But I know that Rabbi Schubert Spira was there. Women did say Kaddish. So they're like, Lach Rav Henkin, when we get out from the other gates, and they said Kaddish. Rabbi Schubert Spira left the Cleveland Heights. They have to understand what's going on there, but the things are changing in Cleveland, and influences change. it depends on the situation. There is good room to look out, and depends on how good the rabbi sees them going to.
What about if the girl has brothers? Is she still allowed to say?
Is she allowed to say it?
Well, according to this posting, would they?
According to Rav Henkin, everything's changed now. Rav Henkin says that anybody wants to say Kaddish, and a woman can get up and say Kaddish, she's like, maybe say Kaddish. Same true of Rav Soloveitchik, same true of Yeshua Soloveitchik. The rules have changed. And I want to make it clear that I don't think the people who objected to Rav Henkin knew what was coming. And that's why they objected. Because until now, all the testimonies we had of a woman getting up saying Kaddish, these are daughters, only daughters. There was no sons. That was a rare situation. You had, once every 5-6 years, you had a situation with no males to say Kaddish. So the father wanted it, or the mother wanted it, that they would get, that they would be mocked. These were rare situations. What Rav Henkin did was essentially open up Pandora's box. He said every daughter could get up at the same time the men get up. And that's what Baron said, and that's what Yeshua Bear said. So the rules have essentially changed, and that's essentially what the issue is.
I just want to follow up Iris' question. Women are okay, the way it sounds, can up in, can up out, can up partially in. But there's still, and maybe this is an anthropological concept, there's still this feeling of wanting to have Kaddish covered 3 times a day for 11 months. A, is that a halakhic concept? And B, then who usually does it? And that's it, the woman says, okay, I can Shabbat and talk to Shul, once, whatever. But isn't able to, let's say, take on it 3 times a day, 11 months.
Post-game, you talk about having someone say Kaddish 3 times a day for the illumination of Tachanun. Kaddish has somehow become sort of this, look, you've been through the sources with me. You essentially know as much as I know. Kaddish seems to have this mystical pull of coins. If it didn't, people, I can holler and scream from today till tomorrow that the high man, learn Torah, give stuck. Kaddish is the low man in the Torah. Now, I can say that all I want to, and the post can all of us say, you're right. But there's something in the Jewish neshama that you gotta say Kaddish. And again, I say it's mystical. I can't put my finger on it. Allah.
It might have
been cultural. So I don't know. What can I tell you?
When it comes to death, people are always more religious.
Yes, I agree. I said that birth and death, keep normal rational people into prison. So I've seen people who are total rationalists. And under the baby's crib, there's a shermanos, there's a red bendel, all this stuff. People who, I would consider super rationalists. Etiquettes. So I put this in, Kaddish has this hold on Klal Yisrael. And Rav Henkin, in discussing this hold, even non-religious people are brought closer to Yiddishkeit because of this Kaddish. And it's true. Oh, it's definitely true. People
very,
come to
very, very important.
Very important. I'm trying to say that what they will say is that Kaddish should be said 3 times a day, you should do that. And what they normally, the post-post will say, I find it very hard pay somebody else to say Kaddish. Other posts will find it very difficult. They say it's a way, and if you were on the other side, if many, many yeshivas find that it's an excellent way of collecting stuff. So I would suggest, seriously. And essentially, you pick a good yeshiva that you'd like to support. It's a way of giving. Usually they give it to a yasam, yatom, or give it to some gentleman, because after who can say Kaddish? It's usually somebody whose parents are alive can't say Kaddish. So usually you find somebody who's appropriate, some yeshiva bacher, she's supporting the yeshiva bacher. Again, there has the yeshivas. Rachmanson, there's no lack of people who can say Kaddish. Can you ask the gentleman or they say Kaddish? But I don't think that would sort of take away of the, and this way you've given stuck in, you supported a yatom, you go to yeshiva and says, I'm willing to give a certain amount of money for this year. That's my mitzvah. I'm supporting the yatom. And how do I do it? I haven't said Kaddish. I've covered all bases. But I don't think that speaking, if I were Rahmanasan speaking to you, I would say, but I know you. And there's no reason why you shouldn't say Kaddish when you have an opportunity to do so. Don't take it as a negative, but at any opportunity you have, you come to shul, and again and again, say Kaddish. You know, that's a different issue. All right? Sometimes there will be a member of the family that will accept the obligation. You know, a son-in-law will do it. They feel the son-in-law, you know, it's my father-in-law. You know, it's and very often you find father-in-law, son-in-law is doing it, you find cousins, mishpacha, to accept responsibility. But that doesn't, and you, and again.
Say they can both do it. Somebody, family member, son-in-law, can take it upon themselves. And
the son-in-law, daughter,
can
do it with
their
parents?
Yes, if he asks his parents permission, he can say the Kaddish, yes, he can say Kaddish. The Kaddish, yes. The answer to that question is yes. It's written in the Ramah.
It's actually a two-sided question. Yeah. I was thinking about it all the time when we were giving it. Yeah. Herr said that it will attract people to Yahaduk. Yeah. And the other side of the coin is the coin is that if not, this, not, I don't say this particular person,
but there will be
might gravitate to conservatism.
That's what Solovich, Aaron Solovich is. Now look, I don't want to say, I think both are true. It should be very clear. Women who try to say Kaddish are not going to have an easy time. They're not going to have an easy time. They have to find the right, no, they're going to find the right shul. Now, if they get up and say Kaddish, where the men are saying Kaddish, in most cases, they're not going to risk to say anything. Nobody's probably going to notice. People are going to say Kaddish. They can say Kaddish. Certainly, if that's on a Shabbos, I'm not aware of the shul, one woman gets up to say Kaddish, people are tolerant, even if they're not.
My parents didn't even drink that a woman couldn't say Kaddish, because I know they went to the yeshivot. And when our parents died, each one separately, I never even dreamed that I couldn't say Kaddish. It just wasn't an issue, because it was so accepted
once upon a
time that it was just
for
men.
You're right.
You know,
right.
So.
It's a very modern, well, it's not a very modern, we saw testimonies that women did it, but only in a situation was an only daughter. Yes. By the time we've reached about the 1950s, Rav Henkin is the one who changes the tone, okay? Changes the tone, and yes, that now he's aware that all women have this need. Just as all mourners have the need, as all sons, as all daughters. Yes, that's the answer. And I don't mean to say, I mean, if you'd like, you can read what's his name?
Hirav Henkin writes, I will not permit.
What?
Hirav Henkin writes, and I will not permit.
Where?
On the number 68,
the last prayer. I will not permit?
No, he doesn't.
And so I'm on this.
He's going to talk about a rabbi. The rabbi says, it's going to cause a turmoil in my community, I won't permit it, and we have to support that rabbi. Because the rabbi has a right to determine what's good for his community. And public policy says, this rabbi says, it's going to turn my community inside out. I mean, I can understand if a woman walks into bubbles and tries to say Kaddish, she's going to turn the community inside out. What can I tell you? So I can understand.
Yes. I want to raise a question about location. When we look at the sources, when we look at them together, we always discuss the Ashkenazi view and the Sephardic view, who makes James and the Halachic God. Then we look at the postkin and we look at not only Harmless and Zane, but some more of these little Harmless or any. They're from Israel. My question is about location. What's the American versus Israeli political public policy issue? And I say very specifically, 1997, a girl was saying Kaddish for her parents from all across America and young Israel, so called modern Orthodox, had no problem with any of these communities. I mean, came to Israel, we called up what we figured were, but not American, we're not talking about Burmans, but Israeli modern Orthodox equivalent, but Ramadan, Mizrahi community. Here we see these post-game, these modern post-game, are from Israel, and yet one
no,
after another.
No,
well,
let's
American, Mr. McKee's in February,
He went to a university, you can ask him, but he's not really sure.
Right.
I imagine if he went to Blinston Shul, he was a coach. No, I'm sure he went to Blinston Shul.
Yeah. Okay, but at least compare it to Nazi in America and here with public policy and
some
political issues. Why is it so much less liberal here?
And I'm trying to just, whatever. I can't tell you why it's less liberal here. I think because the rabbis in control are the old school. Let me explain to you what the difference is. If what, let me talk to you. Let's just mention, why is there no official rabbi for sure?
That's a very good question. Why is
there?
What?
Okay, so let me explain to you. Because if there was an official rabbi, well, first of all, because the people say there are probably too many rabbis in the show anyway. That's answer one. Answer number two, okay, and I've tried to fight for a very hard advantage. Second answer is because there was a rabbi in the show, okay, if the Moitzad Datit picked the rabbi, they paid the salary, the Moitzad Datit would pick the rabbi. You hear me? Mm-hmm. We would have no say who would be the rabbi in the show. The Moitzad Datit would be, to use the Israeli term, manchit, a rabbi on this community. And there was an attempt to do so, and he said, thank you, don't be uktzach, but don't be gufshach. We don't want your honest thing, we don't want your honest.
We point a rabbi with that.
So you
they would, but, no, you can point it. Well, there is a rabbi. I mean, the unofficial official rabbi of the shul is Rabbi Chaskiya, but he doesn't receive a salary, and he's full-time, he doesn't work at the shul full-time. Right, but there is shul, the rabbi does have, we do have a rabbi passing for the shul under for communal issues.
No, I'm serious.
Let's look. In any case, the fact of the matter is that on that particular issue, I mean, it would mean that if we wanted to have a full-time rabbi for the shul, this shul would have to support the rabbi. Okay, now. Fortunately or unfortunately, the shul runs very well without a rabbi. I think it's a loss. But that's what the Palabat is saying. The shul runs fine, so we have to give them the politics of a rabbi. And that has to do with the situation, but you have to be aware that whenever there's a rabbi in the shul, an official rabbi in the shul, and you go to all the shuls, there's only one exception. One exception is Rav Yitzchak of Cohen, who was the rabbi, who was the rabbi of the Rabbanut, He was rabbi, officially rabbi for a while until people found out some stuff. And he didn't get paid. He was rabbi that didn't get paid. But every paid rabbi in this community was picked by the Moitzad Datit.
Picked
out
by the
Prince, their shul. That was built by them. I don't know if he receives a salary for it. I don't know. I think he receives a salary from the shul, but I don't know. I don't what?
Yeshiva.
No. Here's a shul. There's a private
house. Not the wife's. And that's his mother's house.
Mother's house. Okay. I think, that's also the shul's built by Holland. I don't know exactly. I don't know. The answer is I don't know.
And Rav Bari Lahn.
Rav Bari Lahn is the best. He's the Moed.
What do you think is the shul? What about the Estai? How the Estai?
Stein? That's against the Chatam, against the pittance.
It's not as
pittance. He gets a pittance. It's literally a pittance. The shul started, he did it L'Shem Shemayim, but Malabat in order to pay him a little bit, but it's a name only. It probably pays more for taxes. But the fact of the matter is that for a while your son was also involved in Chatam.
My son found it.
Well, right. So anyway, together, is right. And I've given talks all over the United States about this, but then I'm really not here. What? The fact of the matter is, the reason it is that way is our fault. this really is not related to the shir. But it's our fault because when our kids, when our kids said they want to go to become rabbis and chanukim and stuff like that, right? Most parents say, "What the zayin the tachlis? What's an apple the tachlis? You're not going to make a friend of us, so you're going to give them rabbinic, you're going to give them sugar. Go get yourself a university education." When they wanted to become kliqanish, we were so interested in having religious doctors and lawyers and Indian chiefs, we forgot that we needed modern Orthodox rabbis. We needed modern shoftim, modern lachanim. And what happened was, by the beginning when I came here to Eretz Yisrael, in the 70s, that many of these, slowly but surely, all the high schools were being taken over by Chabad. It happened in Yeshiva Tadarom. So at one point, there was the Yeshiva Tadarom came in, the Hanala came in, and they turned everything around. There were a whole bunch of Hester guys that were brought into Yeshiva Tadarom. And I remember when my son Yaakov went to Yeshiva Tadarom, he came home talking about this. It was Ram who was born on a motorcycle in Davin Kibbatikin, and where it's a set of playlists, and they learned about Yomi, they played guitar, music, and these were very modern, what? But there are other Ram in there. Modern Orthodox Hashkafa. And he said, that's not his Ram, he's Ram the Chok, because he went to the army. And he talked about the Muhammad Mitzvah, he talked about those guns. When you have model figures that speak to the boys, but what was happening was now you have a whole new different generation. They're going from Hasidic boys, they're going viewed Tzionut, they're aware of it. They know fully well what it's all about. They know that the next frontier for Tzionut, for religious Zionism, is the Klei Kodesh. And you have more of their struggle, but it's a long time, it's a long walk. That's why I personally think that, and I've even written letters to members of the shul about supporting the kol, like the Rabbinimans kol, the kol of the Yad Brugma. What you're going to have your modern guys who went to the army, who coming to want to be dayanim. Being a dayan, you have to sit and learn for 15, 17 years. It's like being a judge. It's not, no papa, stanka. And they need to be supported. These are top guys learning with really, and you have to support them. So that's the next frontier. And if we don't have a leadership, if you talk about the quality of the rabbis of the cities and the stuff like that, and the dayanim, it's our fault. Our best and brightest go into math and physics. They don't go into Torah. It's tremendous. To answer your question, but it'll change. You just have to be patient, and you have to support, and you have to encourage people to do it. No, I don't think it's the problem.
You say it'll change. What's going to make it change?
If we encourage our children to go into...
Yeah, but people aren't encouraging their kids.
They
aren't.
It's no longer true that you're... When I was growing up, and I came to my father, and I told him, I want to go into the rabbinate, okay? My father, who was terribly burnt by the rabbinate, says, Aryeh, I want you to go into the rabbinate because you want to, not because you have to. And he made sure, he said, I'm your father, I make sure you get a college education. And then I had choices of the night. I wanted to come to Israel. I didn't end up in the rabbinate, and I went to chemistry. That's the other thing. But it wasn't only me, it's my brothers. And each of my brothers functions in some rabbinical capacity now. I mean, but we could have been professional rabbis.
Okay, that's your family, but it seems to me it seems to be getting more and more polarized, and I don't see anywhere that it's getting better here.
Polarized between not in the religion. I think in the modern Orthodox community, you're finding more and more children, okay, children in their 20s and 30s who view their future in chinuch as becoming rabbonim and dayanim and mashgichim, and it's definitely true. It's definitely true. And I think that the modern Orthodox community realize that's got to be. There's a terrible crisis going on in the United States now. Young Israelis can't find modern Orthodox rabbis.
And in England.
In England. And whose fault is it? It's our fault. It's our fault that we didn't encourage our kids to do it. Now, in Israel, we're lucky. We have this tremendous agav, this tremendous source of Hester guys. In Israel, they don't have that yet. In America, they don't have it yet. They're beginning to. There are now Colin, there's a Colin, the young Mizrahi Colin, in Cleveland there's a Mizrahi Colin, in Toronto, where they brought in, they're beginning to build Colin where the person, the goal is to get these guys to go in the rabbinate, to get these guys to think about the yalut.
But it's going to
take a while. You have to have patience, and it costs money. So put your money where your desires are. Yes.
I think if you have the women who are studying, it
works both ways. So things that can go on here in Israel, which are considered l'shem shemayim, while in America they're considered cause celebrities. I mean, you would never find possibly a post-scot situation going on. But there are issues that can be discussed here in Torah journals. All the women by the wall issues were discussed in Tfumi. They're considered taboo to be discussed in many of the Torah journals in the States. Because different things have
been.
Okay, listen, ladies, what I would suggest is the next, okay, we're essentially finished with time. What I'd like to do, there's one more topic I'd like to do. To the end, of, I think we should carry us to the like two more weeks, and maybe two or three more weeks, and then we'll call it quits. What I wanted to do is one last issue is women in leadership positions. Here we can have sometimes women is Rosh Yeshiva, women is Dayanit, Poskov, something like that. Okay, since we already did the public policy, so we'll do that issue. Religious councils, okay? And that will give us hopefully two or three more shares. Carry us to the end of June, and then we'll say farewell for a couple of months, and then okay? Now, again, there is a share until you know death.